faint green light of the narrow tunnel, their footsteps barely perceptible to their tightly covered ears. This section of the caverns ran for more than a mile, then faded abruptly as the passage widened and grew into a towering corridor that was totally black. The rock walls drew away and the ceiling rose until both had disappeared altogether, leaving the company alone in a strange limbo of darkness where only the smooth cavern floor offered any reassurance that the earth had not dissolved entirely. Alanon led them into the blackness, showing no signs of hesitancy. Then abruptly, sound began. Its incredible fury caught them completely unprepared, and for a moment there was panic. The initial shock grew to an enormous roar like the sound of a thousand winds combined in fury and biting force. But beneath this was the horrifying cry of souls screaming in anguish, voices scraping and twisting their tortured way through all the imaginable horrors of inhumanity in utter despair of any hope for salvation. The roar climbed to a shriek, reaching a pitch so far beyond the comprehension of the mortals' stunned minds that their sanity began to break apart. The terrible sounds washed over them, mirroring their own growing despair, driving relentlessly inward and stripping away the tattered nerve ends like layers of skin until the very bone was laid bare. It had taken only an instant. In another instant, they would have been lost. But for the second time, the hopelessly numbed humans were saved, this time from complete madness, as the powerful will of Alanon broke through the crazed sound to cloak them with protective reassurance. The screams and the roar seemed to lessen and fade into a strange buzzing as the grim, dark face projected itself into the seven feverish minds, and the iron thoughts spoke soothingly, commandingly. "Let your minds relax. Think only of me." The men stumbled mechanically through the heavy darkness of the tunnel, their minds groping at the safety line of coherence and calm that the druid held out to them. The walls of the corridor reverberated with the still audible shrieks, and the massive stone of the cavern rumbled frighteningly. One final time, the voices of the banshees rose in feverish pitch, screeching violently in a desperate effort to break through the subconscious wall erected by the druid's powerful mind, but the wall would not yield, and the power of the voices spent itself and faded into a deathly whisper. A moment later, the passageway narrowed once more, and the company was clear of the corridor of the winds. Visibly shaken, their faces streaked with sweat, the men stood dumbly as Alanon brought the line to a halt. Shaking their scattered thoughts into some semblance of order, they removed the rope about their waists and the cloth binding their ears. They were in a small cave, facing toward two huge stone doors laced by iron bindings. The rock walls around them emitted the same peculiar greenish light. Alanon waited patiently until everyone had fully recovered, then beckoned them forward. He paused before the stone portals. With only a slight shove from the lean hand, the massive doors swung silently open. The druid's deep voice was only a whisper in the stillness. "The Hall of Kings." For over 1,000 years, none but Alanon had entered the forbidden tomb. All that time it had remained otherwise undisturbed. A mammoth, circular cavern, the great walls smooth and polished, the ceiling shimmering in a green glow similar to that reflected by the tunnels they had already passed through. Along the circular wall of the giant rotunda, standing with the same proud defiance they presumably had exhibited in life, were stone statues of the dead rulers, each facing toward the center of the chamber and the strange altar that rose upward in the shape of a coiled serpent. Before each statue was piled the wealth of the dead. Casks and trunks of precious metals and jewels, furs, weapons, all the favorite possessions of the deceased. In the walls immediately behind each statue were the sealed, rectangular openings in which rested the remains of the dead kings, their families, their servants. Inscriptions above the sealed crypts gave the history of the rulers interred there, frequently in languages unfamiliar to any of the wandering members of the company. The entire chamber was bathed in the deep green light. The metal and stone seemed to absorb the color. Dust covered everything, a deep rock powder that had settled over the centuries and now rose in small clouds as the footsteps of the men disturbed its long rest. For over 1,000 years, no one had violated the peace of this ancient chamber. No one had tampered with its secrets, nor attempted to unlock the doors that guarded the dead and their possessions. No one but Al-Anon. And now? Shay shivered violently, unexplainably. He shouldn't be here. He could feel a small, distant voice telling him he shouldn't be here. It wasn't that the Hall of Kings was sacred or forbidden, but it was a tomb. It was a tomb for the ancient dead. It was no place for the living. Something gripped him, and with a start he realized it was Al-Anon's hand touching his shoulder. The druid frowned darkly at him, then called softly to the others. They huddled silently in the greenish light as he addressed them in hushed tones. "Through those doors at the far end of the hall is the assembly." He directed their gaze to the other end of the rotunda, where a second set of huge stone doors stood closed. "A wide set of stone stairs leads downward to a long pool, fed by a spring somewhere deep beneath the mountain. At the foot of the stairs, directly before the pool, stands the pyre of the dead, where the monarchs buried here lay in state for a certain number of days, depending on their rank and wealth, presumably so that their souls could escape to the life beyond. We must pass through that chamber in order to reach the passageway that will take us to the Dragon's Crease on the other side of the mountains." He paused and breathed deeply. "When I traveled through these caverns before, I was able to hide myself from the eyes of the creatures put here to destroy intruders. I cannot do this for you. There is something in the assembly, something whose power may prove to be greater than my own. Though it could not sense my presence, I was conscious of it, hidden beneath the deep waters of the pool. Below the stairs, to either side of the pool, are narrow walkways leading to the other end of the chamber, and the opening to the passages beyond. These walkways are the only way past the pool. Whatever it is that guards the pyre of the dead will strike at us there. When we get into the room, Balinor, Menyon, and I will move onto the walkway to the left. That should draw the creature out from his hiding place. When we are attacked, Hendel will take the rest of you along the right walkway through the opening at the far end. Don't stop until you reach the Dragon's Crease. Do you understand?" They nodded slowly. Shay felt strangely trapped, but there was nothing to be gained by talking about it now. Al-Anon straightened to his full 7-foot height and grinned menacingly, his strong teeth gleaming. The little Veilman felt a chill run through him that made him glad 10 times over he was not the enemy of the mystic. In one effortless motion, Balinor drew forth his great sword, the metal blade ringing sharply as it cleared the sheath. Hendel was already moving across the hall, the heavy mace held tightly in one hand. Menyon started to follow, then hesitated, gazing doubtfully on the stores of treasure heaped about the tombs. Would it hurt to take a few? The Veilmen and elves were moving after Hendel and Balinor. Al-Anon stood watching the Highlander, his long arms folded into the black cloak. Menyon turned and looked questioningly at the mystic. "I wouldn't if I were you," the other warned shortly. It's all coated with a substance poisonous to the skin of living things. Touch it, and you will be dead in less than a minute." Menyn stared at him incredulously for a moment, shot a quick glance back at the treasure, then shook his head resignedly. He was halfway across the chamber when, on sudden inspiration, he whipped out two long black arrows and walked over to an open chest of gold pieces. Carefully, he rubbed the metal tips in the precious metal, making certain that his hands did not touch anything but the feathered ends. Grinning with perverse satisfaction, he rejoined the others across the room. Whatever waited beyond the stone doors was going to be given the opportunity to test its resistance to this poison that would supposedly kill any living creature. In a tight cluster, the company gathered around Al-Anon, their metal weapons glinting coldly. A stillness settled over the great room, broken only by the expectant breathing of the eight men huddled about the closed doors. Shay glanced back for just a moment at the Hall of Kings. The tomb seemed undisturbed, save for the ragged trail of footprints in the dust leading across the chamber. A deep haze of this dust hung swirling the greenish light, stirred by the intruder's footsteps, but settling slowly back to the ancient cavern floor. In time, all evidence of their passing would be erased, as the tracks were covered over entirely. At Al-Anon's touch, the stone portals swung open and the company moved noiselessly into the assembly. They were on a high platform that ran forward into a wide alcove and then descended in a series of broad stairs. The cavern beyond was enormous, a vast, towering cave that still exhibited the full, unaltered splendor of its rough, natural creation by nature's careful hands. From the high ceiling hung jagged stalactites, stone icicles formed by water and mineral deposits over thousands of years. Beneath these sculptured stone spears lay a long rectangular pool of deep green water, the surface smooth and glass-like. When a single drop of water fell heavily from an overhanging stone projection, the placid surface rippled outward once and was still. The wary men moved forward to the edge of the platform and looked down on the high stone altar set at the foot of the stairs before the pool, its ancient surface scarred and pocked and in places almost crumbling. The cavern was dimly lit by streaks of phosphorescence that ran brokenly through its rocky walls, giving an eerie, fluorescent glow to the ancient chamber. Slowly the men moved down the stairway, their eyes picking out a single word inscribed in the stone surface of the altar. A few knew its meaning. Valg, a word taken from the ancient gnome tongue. It meant death. Their footsteps reverberated in muffled echoes through the vast cavern. Nothing moved. Everything was shrouded in age and silence. On reaching the foot of the long stairway, they hesitated for a second, eyes fastened on the silent pool. Impatiently, Al-Anon motioned Hendel and his charges to the right. Then, with Menyn and Balinor following, he moved quickly onto the left walkway. A misstep now would prove fatal. From across the pool, Shay watched the three figures edge their way silently along the rough stone wall, keeping well to the rear of the open walkway. There was no movement in the placid waters. They were about midway now, and Shay breathed for the first time. Then the still surface of the dark pool surged upward, and from out of the depths emerged a nightmare. Serpentine in appearance, the loathsome monster seemed to fill the cavern, its slime-covered bulk raising skyward, shattering the ancient stalactites. Its shriek of fury boomed through the assembly. The massive body twisted and flexed as it reared out of the water. Long front legs tipped with deadly hooked claws clutched the empty air, and the great jaws clashed sharply, grinding together the blackened, pointed teeth that lined the edges. The wide, staring eyes burned red amid a cluster of bumps and stunted horns that covered the misshapen head. The entire bulk of the creature was covered with a reptilian skin that dripped with scum and waste that must have been carried from the netherworld's blackest pits. The mouth oozed venom that fell into the water and rose with faint traces of steam. The monstrous thing glared at the three humans on the walkway and hissed with unbridled hatred. Jaws wide, screeching in anticipation of the kill, it attacked. Everyone reacted instantly. Minyan Lee's great ash bow sounded in staccato pings as the poisoned arrows flew with deadly accuracy, burying themselves deeply within the unprotected inner flesh of the serpent's gaping mouth. The creature reared back in pain, and Balinor quickly seized the initiative. Moving to the edge of the walkway, the giant borderman struck powerfully at the exposed forearm of the monster. But to his shock, the great sword only barely scratched the scaly hide, glancing off the heavy coating of slime. The second forearm made a quick swipe at the attacker, missing by inches as the intended victim dove to one side. On the opposite walkway, Hendel made a rush for the open passage at the far end of the pool, shoving the Veilman and the Elven brothers before him. But one of them triggered a hidden release, and a heavy stone slab collapsed in the opening, sealing off the escape route. In desperation, Hendel threw his powerful body against the stone barricade, but it refused to budge. The serpent had been attracted by the sound of the falling stone. Turning away from its battle with Menyon and Balinor, it moved eagerly toward these smaller foes. That would have been the finish if not for the quick reactions of the battle-hardened dwarf. Forgetting the stone slab and disregarding his own safety entirely, Hendel charged at the huge monster bearing down on him and drove the heavy iron mace directly into the closest burning eye. The weapon struck with such force that it smashed the glowing orb. The serpent reared upward in excruciating pain, crashing heavily into the jagged stalactites as it whipped its bulk from side to side. Deadly rock fragments showered the entire chamber. Flick went down with a sharp blow to the head. At the edge of the pool, Hendel was buried under a cascade of crumbling stone and lay motionless. The other three fell back against the blocked entryway as the massive attacker loomed above them. At last, Alanon joined the unequal battle. Raising both arms, he extended his lean hands, and his fingers seemed to light up like small glowing balls. Streaks of blinding blue flame shot out of the tips and struck the head of the raging creature. The force of this new attack completely stunned the unprepared serpent, who thrashed wildly above the boiling water of the pool, shrieking in pain and fury. Moving quickly ahead on the walkway, the druid struck a second time, the blue flames flashing against the head of the enraged beast, twisting it completely around. This second strike threw the great scaled body backward against the cavern wall, where, thrashing in an uncontrollable frenzy, it jarred loose the stone slab that blocked the passageway out. Shay and the Elven brothers had barely managed to drag the unconscious Flick out of the way in time to avoid being crushed by the massive body. They heard the stone slab drop forward with an audible thud, and spying the open passage, yelled wildly to the other fighters. Balinor had reattacked the writhing monster as it again came within reach, striking vainly for the head as it swung down at him, still stunned by the force of Alanon's bolts. Alanon had his eyes fixed on the serpent, and only Menyon saw what the others were yelling about and waved them madly toward the opening. Dale and Shay picked up the fallen Flick and carried him into the tunnel beyond. Durin started to follow, but then hesitated as he caught sight of the unconscious Hendel, still buried beneath the shattered stone rubble. Turning back, he rushed to the pool's edge, grasped the dwarf's limp arm, and vainly attempted to pull him clear of the debris. "Get out!" roared Alanon, who had suddenly spotted the elf near the opening. Choosing this moment of distraction, the serpent struck back. With one mighty sweep of its clawed arm, it brushed Balinor aside, knocking him with crushing force against the chamber wall. Minion leaped in front of the monster, but its sudden rush bowled the Prince of Lee over, and he was knocked from sight. The serpent, still in great pain from its multiple wounds, could think only of reaching the tall figure in the black robes and crushing the life out of him. The beast had one more weapon in its arsenal, and it used it now. The venom-tipped jaws gaped wide at the sight of the intended victim, standing alone and unprotected, and great sheets of flame shot forth, completely encasing the druid. Durin, who was in position to see everything happening on the walkway, gave an audible gasp of dismay. Shay and Dale, standing just beyond the entrance to the tunnel leading from the assembly, watched in mute horror as the flames covered the tall mystic. But a second later the fire died, and Alanon stood untouched before the astonished onlookers. His hands raised and the blue streaks of flame shot out of his extended fingers, striking the head of the serpent with terrific force, sending the scaled body reeling back once again. Steam rose in great clouds from the thrashing waters of the pool, mingling in a heavy mist with the dust and smoke stirred by the battle until everything was obscured from view. Then, from out of the haze, Balinor appeared at Durin's side, his cloak torn and shredded, the shining chainmail chipped and battered, the familiar face streaked with sweat and blood. Together they pulled Hendel from beneath the rocks. With one great arm, the Prince of Calahorn lifted the silent form over his shoulder and motioned Durin ahead of him into the passage where Dale and Shay still lingered with the unconscious Flick. The giant borderman ordered them to pick up the fallen Veilman, and without waiting to see if they obeyed, disappeared down the darkened corridor, Hendel over one shoulder, the great broadsword held tightly in his free hand. The elven brothers quickly did as they were told, but Shay hesitated, searching worriedly for some sign of Menion. The assembly was a shambles, the long rows of stalactites smashed, the walkways a mass of rubble, the walls cracked and shattered, and everything obscured by dust and steam from the boiling pool. To one side of the cavern, the massive form of the serpent was still visible, thrashing in agony against the broken wall, its great bulk a writhing mass of scales and blood. Neither Menion nor Alanon was in view. But a moment later both appeared from out of the thick haze, Menion limping slightly, but still clutching the ash bow and the sword of Lee, Alanon's dark form tattered and layered with dust and ash. Without speaking, the druid waved the Veilman ahead of them, and together the three stumbled through the partially blocked opening. What happened after was vague in everyone's mind. Numbly, the battered group hurried along the tunnel, carrying the two wounded and unconscious men. Time dragged agonizingly away. Then abruptly, they were outside, blinking in the bright light of the afternoon sun, standing at the edge of a dangerously steep cliff face. To their right, the dragon's crease wound its way downward to the open hill country below. Suddenly, the whole mountain began to rumble menacingly, shaking in short tremors beneath their feet. With a sharp command, Alanon ordered them down the narrow trail. Balinor led the way, carrying the still form of Hendel, Menion Lee a couple of steps behind. Durin and Dale followed, carrying Flick. Behind them came Shay and finally Alanon. The sinister rumbling continued somewhere deep within the mountain. Slowly the little group moved along the narrow pathway. The trail wound unevenly amid jagged overhangs and sudden drops, and the men were forced to flatten themselves against the cliff face at regular intervals to avoid losing their balance and falling to the rocks hundreds of feet below. The Dragon's Crease was well named. The continual twists and turns in the path required concentrated skill and caution to navigate successfully, and the recurring tremors made the task doubly hazardous. They had progressed only a short distance along the treacherous pathway when a new sound became audible, a deep roar that quickly drowned out the rumblings in the mountain. Shay, last in line with Al-Anon, was unable to define the source of the roar until he was almost on top of its origin. Rounding a sharp cut in the side of the mountain, which brought him onto a ledge facing northward, he discovered an enormous waterfall directly across from their position on the mountainside. Tons of cascading water crashed with a deafening roar into a great river hundreds of feet below that swept between the mountain ranges and poured into a series of rapids that ran eastward to the Rab Plains. The mighty river swept directly below the ledge on which he stood and the narrow trail ahead, its white waters churning and slapping against the confining sides of the two peaks that hemmed it in. Shay looked at it for a moment, and then hastened on down the trail at Al-Anon's command. The rest of the company had gone a good distance ahead of them, and for a moment were lost from view in the rocks. Shay had gone about 100 feet past the ledge when a sudden tremor, more violent than the others, shook the mountain to its core. Without warning, the section of the trail on which he was standing broke away and slid steadily down the mountainside, carrying the hapless Veilman with it. He gave a cry of dismay, fighting to break his fall as he saw himself sliding toward a steep overhang which dropped off sharply into a long, long fall to the raging river on the valley floor. Al-Anon rushed forward as the Veilman slid wildly in a cloud of dust and rock toward the waiting overhang. "Grab something," roared the druid. "Catch yourself." Shay clutched vainly, clawing at the sheer face of the cliff, and just at the edge of the drop-off, caught himself on a projecting rock. He lay flat against the nearly vertical surface, not daring to try to climb back up, his arms nearly breaking from the exertion. "Hold on, Shay," Al-Anon encouraged him. "I'll get a rope. Don't move an inch." Al-Anon called down the trail for the others, but whether they could have helped, Shay never discovered. As the druid shouted for assistance, a second tremor shook the mountain and jarred loose the unfortunate Veilman from his precarious perch, sending him sliding out beyond the overhang before he could even think to catch himself. Arms and legs flying madly, he fell headlong into the swiftly flowing waters of the river below. Al-Anon watched helplessly as the Veilman struck with crushing force, bobbed to the surface, and was swept away eastward toward the plains beyond, tossing and turning in the boiling river like a small cork until he was lost from sight. Chapter 15. Flick Ohmsford stood quietly at the foot of the Dragon's Teeth and stared into space. The fading rays of the late afternoon sun crossed his stocky frame in faint glimmers, casting his shadow onto the cooling rocks of the giant mountain at his back. He listened for a moment to the sounds about him, the muffled voices of somebody from the company off to his left, the chirping cries of the birds in the forest ahead. In his own mind, he heard Shay's determined voice for an instant, and he recalled his brother's great courage in the face of the countless dangers they had encountered together. Now, Shay was gone, probably dead, washed out by that unknown river to the plains on the other side of the mountains they had battled so hard to cross through. He rubbed his head gently, feeling the bump and the dull pain from the blow of the rock fragment that had knocked him senseless, preventing him from being able to help when his brother had needed him the most. They had been ready to face death at the hands of the Skullbearers, ready to perish by the swords of the roving gnomes, and even ready to succumb to the terrors of the Hall of Kings. But for it all to be ended by a fluke of nature on a narrow cliff ledge when they were so close to escaping was too much for anyone to accept. Flick felt such biting hurt inside that he wanted to cry out his bitterness. But even now, he could not. His insides knotted at the anger he could not manage, and he felt instead only a great sense of waste. Minyan Lee seemed in marked contrast as he paced in furious desperation several yards away from the veilman, his lean figure bent in what could only be described as a wounded crouch. His own thoughts burned deep with anger, the kind of futile rage that a caged beast displays when there is no hope of escape, and only its pride and its hatred of what has happened to it remain. There was nothing he could have done to help Shay, he knew. But that did little to ease the sense of guilt he felt at not having been there when the cliff ledge gave way and the veilman was thrown to the churning waters of the rapids below. Something might have been done to prevent it had he not left Shay alone with the druid. Yet he knew it was not Al-Anon's fault. He had done everything possible to protect Shay. Minyan moved with long, angry strides, digging into the ground with the sharp heels of his boots. He refused to admit that the quest was ended, that they would be forced to admit defeat when the Sword of Shannara was so nearly within their grasp. He paused and considered for a moment the object of their search. It still didn't make any sense to the Highlander. Even if they got the sword, what could a man, not yet more than a grown boy, hope to do against the power of a creature like the Warlock Lord? Now, they would never know, for Shay was probably dead. Even if he wasn't dead, he was lost to them. Nothing seemed to make much sense anymore, and Minyan Lee realized suddenly how very much that casual, relaxed friendship between them had meant. They had never spoken of it, never really openly acknowledged it, but it had been there all the same, and it had been dear to him. Now it was ended. Minyan bit down on his lip in helpless anger and continued to pace. The others in the company were gathered near the foot of the Dragon's Crease, which ended just yards behind them. Durin and Dale spoke to each other in hushed tones, their fine elven features wrinkled with concern, their eyes lowered, looking at each other only occasionally. Close at hand, his solid frame propped against a massive boulder, rested Hendel, who, while always close-mouthed, was now moody and unapproachable. His shoulder and leg were bandaged, his stolid face scarred and bruised from the battle with the serpent. He thought briefly of his homeland, his waiting family, and for an instant wished he could see the green of Cullhaven once more before the end. He knew that without the Sword of Shannara and without Shay to wield it, his land would be overrun by the Northland armies. Hendel was not alone in his thoughts. Balinor was thinking much the same thing, his eyes on the solitary giant standing motionless in a small grove of trees some distance away from the others. He knew that they now faced an impossible decision. Either they must give up the quest and turn back in an effort to reach their homelands and perhaps locate Shay, or they must continue on to Paranor and seize the Sword of Shannara without the courageous Veilman. It was a difficult choice to make, and no one would be very pleased either way. He shook his head sadly as the memory of the bitter quarrel between his brother and himself passed momentarily through his mind. He had his own decision to make when he returned to the city of Tirsis, and it would not be pleasant. He had not spoken to the others about it, and at the moment his personal problems were of secondary importance. Suddenly the druid wheeled about and started back to them, his own mind evidently decided. They watched him approach, the black robe flowing gently as he came, the fierce, dark face resolute even in this moment of bitter defeat. Minyan had frozen in his tracks, his heart beating madly as he awaited the confrontation he knew must come between them, for the Highlander had chosen his own course of action, and he suspected it would not be that of Al-Anon. Flick caught the hint of fear in the face of the Prince of Lee, but saw there, too, a strange courage as the man braced himself. All of them rose hesitantly and came together as the dark form drew closer, their tired, discouraged minds suddenly regenerated with a fierce determination not to admit defeat. They could not know what Al-Anon would command, but they knew they had come too far and sacrificed too much to give up now. He stood before them, the deep eyes burning with mixed feelings, the shadowed face a granite wall of strength, worn and scarred. When he spoke, the words were frosted and sharp in the silence. "It may be that we are beaten, but to turn back would be to dishonor ourselves in our own eyes as much as in the eyes of those who depend on us. If we are to be defeated by the evil in the Northland, by things born of the spirit world, then we must turn and face it. We cannot back away and hope for some elusive miracle to stand between us and what most surely moves even now to enslave and destroy us. If death comes, it should find us with weapons drawn and the sword of Shannara in our hands." He bit off the last sentence with such icy determination that even Balinor felt a slight shiver of excitement course through him. All stood in mute admiration of the druid's unflagging strength, and they felt a sudden pride in being with him, being a part of the little group he had chosen for this dangerous and costly quest. "What about Shay?" Minion spoke out suddenly, perhaps a bit sharply, as the druid's penetrating eyes turned on him. "What has become of Shay, who was the reason for this expedition in the first place?" Al-Anon shook his head slowly, considering once again the Veilman's fate. "I cannot guess any better than you. He was washed out to the plains by that mountain river. Perhaps he lives, perhaps not. But we can do nothing for him now."
"What you are proposing is that we forget him and go after the sword. A useless piece of metal without the rightful bearer," Minion shouted in anger, his pent-up frustration coming to the fore at last. "Well, I go no farther until I know what has happened to Shay, even if it means giving up the quest and searching until I find him. I will not desert my friend."
"Watch yourself, Highlander," warned the slow, mocking voice of the mystic. "Do not be foolish. To blame me for the loss of Shay is pointless, for I most of all would wish him no harm. What you suggest lacks any semblance to reason."
"Enough wise words, druid," stormed Menyon, stepping forward in absolute disregard for what might happen next, his hot temper driven to the brink by the tall wanderer's impassive acceptance of the loss of the Veilman. "We have followed you for weeks, through 100 lands and perils without once questioning what you ordered. But this is too much for me. I am a prince of Lee, not some beggar who does what he is told without question, caring for no one but himself. My friendship with Shay was nothing to you, but it was more to me than 100 swords of Shannara. Now stand aside. I will go my own way." "Fool, you are less a prince and more a clown to speak like this," Al-Anon raged, his face tightening into a mask of anger, the great hands balling into fists and clenching before him. The others paled as the two opponents lashed verbally at each other in unbridled fury. Then, sensing the physical combat that was about to ensue, they stepped between them, talking quickly, trying to calm them with reason, fearful that a split in the company now would mark the end of any chance for success. Flick alone had made no move, his own thoughts still on his brother, disgusted by the helplessness he felt at being powerless to do anything but feel inadequate. The minute Minion had spoken, he knew that the Highlander had expressed his own feelings, and he would not leave here without knowing what had befallen Shay. But it always seemed that Al-Anon knew so much more than the rest of them, that his decisions were always the right ones. To disregard the druid's words completely now seemed somehow wrong.
He struggled within his own mind for a moment, trying to think what Shay would do in this situation, what he might suggest to the others. Then, almost without realizing it, he knew the answer.
Elanon, there is a way, he declared abruptly, shouting to be heard above the noise.
They all looked over at him at once, surprised by the determined look on the stocky Veilman's face. Elanon nodded to indicate he was listening.
You have the power to speak to the dead. We saw you do it back in the valley. Can you not tell if Shay lives? Your power is great enough to seek out the living if you can raise the dead. You can tell where he is, can't you?
Everyone looked back at the druid, waiting to see what he would do. Elanon sighed heavily and looked downward, his anger for Menyon forgotten as he pondered the Veilman's question.
I could do this, he responded to everyone's amazement and general relief, but I will not. If I use my power to find out where Shay is, whether he is dead or alive, I will most certainly reveal our presence to the Warlock Lord and to the Skullbearers. They would be alerted and waiting for us at Perrinor. If we go to Perrinor, Menyon cut in darkly, whereupon Elanon wheeled on him in fury, his lagging anger revived. Again, everyone leaped to separate them.
Stop it! Stop it! Flick ordered angrily. This is helping no one, least of all Shay.
Elanon, I have asked for nothing during this entire trip. I had no right to ask. I came by my own choice. But I have the right now because Shay is my brother. Perhaps not by blood or race, but by stronger bonds still. If you will not use your power to find out where he is and what has happened to him, then I will go with Menyon and search until Shay is found.
He is right, Elanon. Balinor nodded slowly, one great hand coming to rest lightly on the little Veilman's shoulder. Whatever befalls us, these two have a right to know whether there is any chance for Shay. I know what it means if we are discovered, but I say we must take that chance.
Durin and Dale nodded vigorously in agreement. The druid mystic looked aside to Hendel for his opinion, but the taciturn dwarf made no movement, staring into the other's black eyes.
Elanon looked at them one by one, perhaps assessing their true feelings as he thought of the risk involved, weighing the worth of the sword against the loss of two of the company. He stared absently at the fading sun as the twilight of early evening settled into the mountains with slow ripples of darkness blending into the red and purple of the passing day. It had been a long, hard trip, and they had nothing to show for it, only the loss of the man for whom the whole journey had been made. It seemed so wrong, and he could appreciate their reluctance to continue now. He nodded to himself in understanding, then looked back at the others and saw their eyes turn suddenly bright, believing him to be nodding his agreement to Flick's demand. Without even a small smile of acquiescence, the tall wanderer shook his head firmly. The choice is yours. I will do as you ask. Stand back, and do not speak to me or approach me until I tell you.
The members of the company backed away while he remained quietly in place, head bent in concentration, the long arms clasped before him with the great hands buried in the long cloak. Only the distant sounds of evening were audible in the deepening gloom. Then the druid stiffened and a white glow spread out from his tensed body, a blinding aura of light that caused the others to squint, then shield their eyes protectively. One moment the glow was everywhere and the dark form of Elanon was lost from sight, and in the next it flashed brilliantly and was gone.
Al-Anon stood as he had before, motionless against the darkness, then slowly slumped to the ground, one lean hand pressed tightly to his forehead. The others hesitated for only a moment, then disregarded his earlier command and rushed forward, afraid that he had been injured. Al-Anon looked up in disapproval, angered that they had disobeyed him. Then he saw in the bent faces their deep concern. He stared in disbelief and with sudden understanding as they gathered about in silence. He was deeply touched, a strange warmth spreading through him as he realized the loyalty these six men of different races, different lands, different lives felt for him, even after all that had happened. For the first time since the loss of Shay, Al-Anon felt a sense of relief. He climbed shakily to his feet, leaning slightly on the strong arm of Balinor, still weak from the strain of seeking Shay. He stood quietly for a moment, and then smiled faintly. "Our young friend is indeed alive, though it's a miracle I cannot explain. I located his life force on the other side of these mountains, probably somewhere near the river that carried him out to the East Plains. There were others with him, but I could not determine what their purpose was without an extensive mind probe. That would surely give our position away and weaken me to the point of uselessness." "But he is alive. You're certain?" Flick demanded eagerly. Al-Anon nodded his assurance. The entire group broke into broad smiles of relief. Minion slapped the elated Flick on his broad back and did a small dance step and leap. "Then the problem has resolved itself," the Prince of Lee exulted. "We have to go back over the Dragon's Teeth and find him, then continue the trip to Paranor to get the sword." His smiling face fell abruptly, and the slow burn of anger replaced it as Al-Anon shook his head negatively. The others stared in astonishment, certain that this was what the druid himself would have suggested. "Shay is in the hands of a gnome patrol," the mystic stated pointedly. "He is being taken northward, more than likely to Paranor. We could not reach him without fighting our way back through the guarded passes of the Dragon's Teeth and trailing him over those gnome-infested plains. We would be diverted for days, perhaps longer, and our presence would be detected in no time." "There's no guarantee they don't already know about us," Minion shouted irately. "You said that yourself. What good will we be to Shay if he falls into the hands of the Warlock Lord? What good will the sword do us without the bearer?" "We cannot desert him," pleaded Flick, stepping forward once more. The others said nothing, but stood mutely, waiting to hear Al-Anon's explanation. Darkness had completely enfolded the high mountain country, and the men could barely make out one another's faces in the dim light. The moon was hidden from view by the monstrous peaks that rose behind them. "You have forgotten the prophecy," admonished Al-Anon patiently. "The last part promised that one of us would not see the other side of the Dragon's Teeth, but that he would be the first to place hands on the Sword of Shannara. That one we now know to be Shay. Furthermore, the prophecy said that we, who reached the other side of the mountains, would view the sword before the passing of two nights. It would seem that fate will bring us all together."
"That may be good enough for you, but not for me," stated Minion flatly, with Flick nodding in vigorous agreement. "How can we place our trust in some crazy promise made by a ghost? You're asking us to risk Shay's life."
Al-Anon seemed to smolder in fury for a moment, fighting to control his quick temper. Then calmly he looked at the two and shook his head in disappointment.
"Have you not believed in a legend from the very start?" he asked quietly.
Have you not yourself seen the foothold that the spirit world has secured in your world of flesh and blood, earth and stone? Have we not from the beginning been fighting against beings born of this other existence, beings who possess powers that surely do not belong to mortal men? You have witnessed the potency of the elf stones. Why would you now turn your back on all that in favor of what your common sense tells you? A reasoning process that relies on fact and stimuli accumulated in this world, your material world, unable to transpose itself to an existence where even your most basic understandings have no meaning. They stared at him wordlessly, realizing that he was right, but unwilling to abandon their plan to find Shay. The whole journey had been premised on half-dreams and old legends, not on common sense, and suddenly to decide it was time to be practical once again was indeed a ludicrous idea. Flick had given up being practical the day he had first run in fear from Shady Vale. "I would not be concerned, my young friends," Al-Anon soothed, suddenly next to them, a lean hand on each shoulder. Strangely comforting even now. Shay still carries the elf stones, and their power will give him great protection. They may also guide him toward the sword, since they are attuned to it. With luck, we will find him when we find the sword at Perenor. All roads now lead to the Druid's Keep, and we must be certain we are there to give what aid we can to Shay. The other members of the company had gathered up their weapons in small packs and stood ready, their silhouettes shadow-like in the dim starlight, finely etched pencil lines against the blackness of the mountains. Flick gazed northward to the dark forest that blanketed the low country beyond the Dragon's Teeth. In its midst, rising upward like an obelisk, were the cliffs of Perenor, and there, at the apex, the Druid's Keep and the Sword of Shannara. The end of the quest. Flick looked quietly for a few moments at the solitary pinnacle, then turned to Menyon. The Highlander nodded reluctantly. "We'll go with you." Flick's voice was a hushed whisper in the stillness. The swirling waters of the rushing river dashed madly against the confining walls of their mountain channel, beating and raging their way eastward, dragging with them stray debris and driftwood that had fallen into their restless grasp. They rushed down out of the mountains in heavy rapids that churned fiercely around smooth-surfaced rocks and sudden bends, winding slowly toward the calm of the quiet rivers that branched into the hilly lowlands above the Rab Plains. It was in one of these small, quiet tributaries that the man, still bound to the splintered log by his leather belt, finally washed up on a mud riverbank, unconscious and nearly drowned. The clothes he wore were ripped and shredded, the leather boots lost, the damp face ashen and bloodied from the beating sustained when he had been swept through the series of rapids down the river that had carried him to this place. He awakened, realizing that he had at last reached land. Feebly untying himself from the beached log, he dragged himself on hands and knees farther onto the shore and into the deep grass of a low hill. As if by reflex, his battered hands felt for the small leather pouch at his waist, and to his relief, it was still there, securely bound by the leather thongs. A moment later, the last of his remaining strength exhausted, he fell into a deep, welcome sleep. He slept soundly in the warmth and quiet of the day until late afternoon, when the cooling grass whipping against his face in a building breeze caused him to stir slightly. There was something else as well, something in his now rested mind that warned him suddenly that he was in danger. But he could barely rouse his sluggish body to a half-sitting position as a group of 10 or 12 figures appeared at the crest of the hill above him,
paused in astonishment as they saw his raised figure, then hastened down the hill to reach him. Instead of carefully turning his battered body to check for injuries, they flung him flat once again, gripping his helpless arms behind his back and tying them securely with leather thongs that bit into the unprotected skin. His feet were bound as well, and at last he was turned face up where he could finally focus on his captors. His worst fears were immediately confirmed. The gnarled yellow frames, clothed in forest garb and armed with short swords, were easily recognizable after Menyon's description of the incident that had taken place only days before in the Pass of Jade. He looked fearfully into the sharp gnome eyes as they gazed with some amazement at his half-man, half-elf features, and at the remnants of his unusual Southland garb. Finally, the leader reached down and began to search him thoroughly. Shay struggled, but was slapped hard several times and at last lay motionless, as the gnome removed the small leather pouch containing the precious elf stones. The gnomes gathered around curiously as the three blue stones, shining brightly in the warm sunlight, were emptied into the hand of the leader. There was a brief discussion, none of which the captive was able to follow, concerning what he was doing with the stones and where he could have found them. At last it was decided that both the captive and the stones should be taken to the main encampment at Paranor, where higher authorities could be consulted. The gnomes dragged their captive to his feet, cutting the thongs that bound his legs, and proceeded to march him northward, pushing him from time to time when he slowed from exhaustion. They were still moving northward at sunset when, on the other side of the mountain barrier known as the Dragon's Teeth, the druid leader of a small band of determined seekers struggled within his own mind to pinpoint the missing Shay Ohmsford. It was in the early morning hours, wrapped with the blanket silence of darkness and hidden by the shadows of the heavy forests that so completely shut out the reassuring light of the moon and stars, that the company stood at last before the cliffs of Paranor. It was a moment that would last forever in their minds, as expectant eyes traveled upward over the steep rock walls, unbroken by trail or ledge, upward past the dwarfed height of the tall pines and oaks, which ended abruptly as the cliffs began, upward still farther to the man-made structure at its apex, the Druid's Keep. The keep was castle-like, age-old walls of blocked stone rising to peaked turrets and spiraled towers that cut the sky in proud defiance. It was unmistakably a fortress built to withstand assault by the strongest army, the ancient home and protectorate of the all but extinguished race of men called druids. Within the heart of this stronghold of stone and iron had long rested the memorial of man's triumph over the forces of the spirit world, the symbol of the courage and hope of the races in times long past, forgotten over the years as generations passed away and old legends died. The wondrous sword of Shannara. As the seven men stood there surveying the druid's keep, Flick's mind traveled back over the events that had taken place since the company had departed the Dragon's Teeth at sunset. They had traveled quickly over the open grasslands, separating them from the forest surrounding Paranor, reaching the seclusion of its dark perimeter without incident in only a few short hours. At that time, Alanon briefed them on what to expect next. The forest, he said, was impenetrable unless one knew how to avoid the dangerous obstacles that the warlock lord had created to discourage any attempt to reach the druid's keep. Wolves prowled the entire woodland, huge gray beasts that could catch anything on 2 or 4 feet and tear it to pieces within seconds. Beyond the wolves, surrounding the base of the cliffs beneath the keep, was an impregnable barrier of thorns, coated with a poison for which there was no known cure. But the resourceful druid was prepared. They moved quickly into the Black Forest, not bothering to choose any approach but the direct one, their path taking them straight for the fortress. Alanon warned them to stay close to him, but the warning was quite unnecessary. Only Minion seemed eager to forge ahead of the group, and the Highlander rejoined them instantly at the first sound of the marauding wolves. The great gray beasts attacked within minutes after the men entered the forest, their eyes blood red in the darkness, their huge jaws snapping in blind hatred. But before they could reach the alarmed group, Alanon placed a strange whistle to his lips and blew softly. A sound so high-pitched as to be indistinguishable to the men was emitted, and the snarling wolves scattered brokenly, wheeling about and scurrying off with loud cries of dismay, their frightened whimpers still audible long after they were lost from sight. The wolves appeared twice more during the remainder of the trek through the forest, although it was impossible to tell if it was the same pack or a different one. Flick was inclined to believe they were different packs after observing the effect of the strange whistle. Each time the wolves cringed in terror, leaving the travelers untouched. The company reached the thorn barrier without difficulty, but the bristling mass of poisonous spikes that confronted them seemed truly impenetrable, even by the redoubtable Alanon. Once again he reminded them that this was the homeland of the druids, not the warlock lord. Leading them to the right, he skirted the edge of the barrier until he reached a point that seemed to satisfy him. Quickly pacing off a distance from a nearby oak that looked for all the world to Flick like any other oak, the druid marked a spot on the ground before the thorny obstruction, nodding to the others that this was to be the spot of entry. Then, to their amazement, the grim mystic simply walked up to the razor-sharp spikes and disappeared into the vegetation, only to reappear a moment later unharmed. In hushed tones, he explained to them that at this point the barrier was fake and quite harmless, a secret passage to the fortress. There were others as well, all indistinguishable to any human eye, unaware of what to look for. And so the company passed through the barrier, discovering that the spikes were indeed harmless, and stood at last before the walls of Perrinor. It seemed impossible somehow to Flick that they should be here at all. The journey had been an endless one while they were making it, the dangers encountered by them never conquered, only evaded and ultimately substituted one for another. Yet here they were. All that remained was to scale the cliffs and seize the sword, no simple task, but nevertheless no more difficult than the others they had faced and successfully completed. He gazed upward to the castle battlements, studying briefly the spaced torches that lit the ramparts, knowing that the enemy guarded those walls and the sword within. He wondered who the enemy was, what it was. Not the gnomes or the trolls, but the real enemy. A creature that belonged in another world, but that had invaded this one in some inexplicable way to enslave the humans who inhabited it. He wondered vaguely if he would ever know the reason behind all that had happened to them, the reason why they stood here now, hunters for the legendary Sword of Shannara, of which none of them, save the druid mystic, knew anything. He sensed that there was a lesson somewhere to be learned, but at the moment it eluded him. He only wanted to get the matter over with and get out of there alive. His thoughts ended abruptly as Alanon motioned them forward along the steep walls of the cliff. Again the druid seemed to be searching for something. A few minutes later he halted before a smooth portion of the cliff face, touched something in the rock, and a concealed door swung open to reveal a hidden passageway. Alanon stepped inside for a moment and returned with unlit torches, giving one to each of the company and indicating that they were to follow him. They moved silently inside, halting momentarily in the small entryway as the stone door closed noiselessly behind them. Squinting in the near blackness, they saw a vague outline of stone steps leading upward into the rock, barely visible in the dim light of a lone torch flickering just ahead in the passage. They climbed carefully to that torch, and each man lit his own to provide the necessary light for the ascent to the castle. Putting a single finger to his lips to indicate that he expected absolute silence, the dark figure of their leader turned and began to climb the damp stone steps, his black cloak billowing slightly as he walked, filling the entire passageway ahead with its shadow. The others followed without a word. The assault of the Druid's Keep had begun. The staircase rose in a continual spiral, winding and twisting until at last no one knew how far they had come. The air in the passage became gradually warmer and more comfortable to breathe, and the dampness of the walls and steps diminished until it was entirely gone. Their heavy leather hunting boots scraped faintly against the stone, echoing through the deep silence of the caverns. Hundreds of steps, and many minutes later, the company reached the end of the tunnel. A massive wooden door, bound with iron and fastened into the rock, blocked their passage. Alanon again proved that he knew the way well. A single touch on the binding and the door swung silently open to admit the men into a large chamber with numerous passages leading out of it, all of them well lit by burning torches. A quick look around revealed no one in sight, so Alanon brought the company around him once again. "We are directly below the castle proper," he explained in a barely audible whisper as the others crowded close. "If we can reach the room where the Sword of Shannara rests without being seen, then we may be able to escape without a fight." "Something's wrong," Balinor cautioned shortly. "Where are the guards?" Alanon shook his head to indicate he couldn't answer, but the others saw the concern in his eyes. Something was amiss. "The passage we will take runs to the main heating ducts and a back stairway that leads to the central hall. Say nothing more until we are there, but keep your eyes open." Without waiting for any response, he turned and moved quickly toward one of the open tunnels, and the others followed hastily. The passage led upward, twisting tightly around after a short distance until it seemed they must be cutting back on themselves. Balinor had discarded his torch and drawn his broadsword after only a few steps. Then the rest of the company was quick to follow his lead. The flickering light from the torches, fastened in iron racks to the bedrock of the cavern, cast their crouched shadows against the stone walls, their reflected images moving like furtive creatures seeking to escape the light. They crept warily through those ancient tunnels. The druid, the two princes, the veilman, the elven brothers, and the dwarf, all watching expectantly, caught up in the guarded excitement that comes with the end of a long hunt. Apart from one another, spread out along the walls of the passage, weapons held ready, eyes and ears straining for any hint of danger, they moved steadily forward, farther upward, deeper into the core of the Druid's Keep. Then the silence slowly faded, and there was a muffled sound like heavy breathing, and the heat became more intense. Ahead the passageway ended, and a stone door with an iron handle came into view, its edges outlined sharply by a piercing light from the chamber just beyond. The mysterious sound increased in volume and became identifiable. It was the throbbing hum of machinery lodged in the rock beneath them, pumping with steady rhythm. Apprehensively, the members of the company approached the closed door on Alanon's silent command. As the giant druid opened the heavy stone barrier, the unsuspecting men were struck by a blast of hot air that surged violently through their lungs to lodge in the pits of their stomachs. Gasping for air, they momentarily hesitated, then moved reluctantly into the room. The door swung shut behind them. They knew where they were in an instant.
The room was actually little more than a circular catwalk above a huge pit that dropped off into the rock for well over 100 feet. At the bottom burned a fierce blaze, fed by some unknown source, its red-orange flames leaping into the air toward the top of the deep well. The pit cut away the greater portion of the chamber, leaving only the small walkway several feet wide with a short iron guardrail that rimmed its inner edge. From the ceiling and walls ran various heating ducts which carried the hot air to other parts of the structure. A concealed pumping system controlled the amount of heat generated by the open furnace. Because it was night, the pumping system had been shut down, and the temperature level along the catwalk was still tolerable, despite the intense heat of the pit fire below. When the bellows were in full operation, any human passing through the chamber would be fried in a matter of seconds. Minion, Flick, and the elven brothers paused by the railing to get a closer look at the system. Hendel hung back, uncomfortable in this confining rock structure, comparing it unfavorably to the open woodlands with which he was familiar. Alanon moved to Balinor's side and conversed with him for a few moments, glancing uneasily at the several closed doors leading into the chamber and pointing to the open spiral staircase that led to the upper halls of the castle. Finally, the two seemed to settle on something, nodding in agreement, and signaled the others to catch up. Hendel was only too glad to comply. Minion and the elven brothers moved away from the railing to join him. Only Flick lingered a second, strangely attracted by the fascinating blaze below. This slight delay produced an unexpected result. As he lifted his eyes with a parting glance to the other side of the chamber, he saw the dark figure of a skull-bearer appear out of nowhere. Flick froze instantly. The creature remained in a half-crouch directly across the pit from him, its body a black mass even in the light of the pit fires, the caped wings billowing out slightly behind it. Its legs were crooked, the feet ending in cruel-looking claws that seemed capable of rending the stone itself. Hunched low between the massive shoulders, the head and face bore a vague resemblance to scarred coal. The wicked eyes fastened on the speechless Veilman, their depths drawing him closer to the reddish glow that burned within, an open invitation to death. With slow, dragging steps, it began to make its way around the chamber, its breath rasping with every labored step as it drew closer and closer to the spellbound Flick. He wanted to cry out, run away, do anything but stay where he was, yet the strange eyes held him motionless. He knew he was finished. But the others had noticed his immobile form. Following his frightened gaze across the chamber, they had discovered the black skull-bearer creeping noiselessly around the rim of the pit. In a flash, Alanon leaped in front of Flick, yanking him around to break the spell of the creature's terrible eyes. Dazed, Flick stumbled backward into the waiting arms of Minion, who had rushed to his assistance. The others stood just behind the druid, their weapons held ready. The creature stopped several yards from Alanon, still in a half-crouch, hiding the hideous face from the fire's glow with one raised wing and clawed hand. Its breath sounded in slow, steady rasps as its cruel eyes rested on the tall figure that stood between it and the little Veilman. "Druid, you are a fool to oppose me." The voice hissed from somewhere deep within the creature's formless face. "You are all doomed. You were doomed from the moment you chose to come after the sword. The master knew you would come, Druid. He knew." "Get away while you can, hateful one," Alanon commanded in the most menacing tone any of the members of the company had ever heard him use. "You frighten no one here. We will take the sword, and you will not stand in our way. Step aside, lackey, and let your master show himself." The words burned into the air, cutting through to the skull-bearer like knives.
The creature hissed its fury, the rasping breath coming in quick gasps as it took another step, crouching lower, its eyes frightful to look into as they blazed with new hatred. "I will destroy you, Al-Anon. Then no one will be left to oppose the Master. You have been our pawn from the start, though you could not have guessed. Now we have you within our reach, along with your most valuable allies. And look what you have brought us, Druid. The last heir of Shannara." To the shock of everyone, the claw-like hand pointed to an astonished Flick. The creature did not seem to realize that Flick was not the heir, or that Shay had been lost to them on the dragon's teeth. For a moment, no one spoke. The fire roared in the pit below, billowing up suddenly with a gust of boiling air that singed the unprotected faces of the mortals. The claws of the black spirit creature seemed to reach toward them. "Now, fools," the hate-filled voice rasped at them, "you shall receive the kind of death your species deserves." Chapter 16. As the final words of the black creature hissed away in the flame-lit air, everything seemed to happen at once. With a dramatic sweep of one lean arm and a command so sharp it jarred them all into instant action, the giant druid sent the tensed members of his little company charging toward the open staircase that led to the main hall of the druid's keep. As the six men broke in a mad dash for the winding stairway behind them, the skull-bearer lunged for Al-Anon. The thudding impact of their collision could be heard even by the fleeing men, who were already starting up the staircase. Save for one. Flick hesitated, torn by the desire to escape, but held spellbound by the titanic struggle between the two powerful beings, locked in combat only inches from the rising flames of the great open furnace. He stood at the bottom of the staircase, hearing the disappearing footfalls of his companions as they raced for the upper hall. A moment later the footsteps were gone, leaving him the sole witness to the incredible struggle between druid and skullbearer. The black-garbed figures were immobile at the edge of the furnace, statues frozen in place with the great strain of their battle, dark faces only inches apart, the lean arms of the giant druid holding firm the claw-tipped limbs of the deadly spirit creature. The skull-bearer was attempting to bring his razor-sharp hands close enough to the mystic's unprotected throat to rip the life out of him and end the battle quickly. The black wings heaved with the exertion, flapping in fury to add momentum to the assault, the unmistakable rasp of its breathing cutting the heated air with ragged desperation. Then suddenly, the Northland creature's wiry leg shot out, tripping the druid so that he fell backward onto the stone floor at the edge of the pit. Like a shot, the attacker was upon him, one clawed hand sweeping downward for the kill. But the victim was too quick, rolling deftly away from the deadly talons and free from the creature's grasp. Nevertheless, Flick saw the blow catch a portion of the shoulder and heard the distinct rending of cloth as first blood was drawn. Flick gave a gasp of dismay, but a moment later the druid was on his feet, showing no sign of injury. Twin bolts of blue flame shot out of the extended fingers of his hands, striking the rising skull-bearer with shattering force, throwing the infuriated creature back against the railing. But while the mystic bolts had visibly hurt the serpent during the battle in the Hall of Kings, they did little more than slow the Northland creature for a few brief seconds. Roaring in fury, it counterattacked. Blazing red bolts shot from its burning eyes. Al-Anon brought his cloak up in a sweeping movement, and the bolts appeared to deflect into the stone walls of the chamber. For a moment the creature hesitated, and the two opponents circled each other warily in the manner of two beasts of the forest, locked in a life-and-death struggle which only one could survive. For the first time,
Flick noticed that the temperature was rising. With the approach of dawn, the furnace tenders had risen to care for the heating needs of the awakening castle. Unaware of the battle taking place in the walkway overhead, they had activated the dormant bellows machinery at the bottom of the pit, stoking the fire to build it up to an intensity which would enable heated air to warm all the chambers of the druid's keep. As a result, flames were now visible above the edge of the pit, and the temperature of the chamber was rising steadily. Flick felt the sweat pouring down over his face, soaking through his warm hunting outfit. But still, he would not leave. He sensed that if Al-Anon were defeated, they would all be doomed, and he was determined to know the outcome. The Sword of Shannara would mean nothing to them if the man who had brought them to this final battleground were destroyed. With rapt fascination clouding his stocky face, Flick Ohmsford watched what might be the fate of the races and the lands being decided by the two seemingly indestructible protagonists of Mortal Man and Spirit Lord. Al-Anon had attacked again with the flashing blue bolts, striking at the circling skullbearer in brief, biting blows, trying to force it into a hasty move, trying to cause it to slip, to make a single, fatal mistake. The spirit creature was no fool, but an evil spawned of 100 hunts in which it alone had been the victor, and the victims all lay forgotten beyond the world of mortal men. It dodged and twisted with frightening ease, always coming back to the same tense crouch, watching and waiting for its own moment to strike. Then, in a totally unexpected move, the black wings spread wide and it circled into the air in a sweep that carried it soaring around the flames of the furnace and down again with vicious speed onto the tall figure of Al-Anon. The clawed hands raked downward, and for a moment Flick thought all was surely lost. Miraculously, the floor druid escaped the deadly hands, throwing the skullbearer completely over him with one mighty heave of his powerful arms. The hapless creature flew wildly through the air and crashed with an audible thud into the stone wall beyond. It struggled to its feet in an instant, but the force of the blow had shaken it, slowing it down just enough, and before it could escape, the giant druid was upon it. The two black figures thrashed about against the wall as if inextricably joined, their limbs locked onto each other like twisted branches. When they reared to full height, Flick could see that Al-Anon was behind the struggling skullbearer, his mighty arms locked vice-like about the head of the creature, the straining muscles slowly crushing the life away. The victim's wings beat madly, its hooked arms clutching vainly for something to break the hold that was destroying it. The fire-red eyes burned with the fury of the furnace pit itself, shooting forth bolts of fire that tore into the stone walls, leaving gaping, blackened holes. The combatants lurched away from the wall and rocked wildly toward the blazing pit at the center of the heated chamber until they were against the low iron railing. For a moment it appeared to the wide-eyed Veilmen that both would lose their balance and plunge into the flames below. But abruptly, Al-Anon straightened with a mighty effort, dragging his captive back from the railing a few scant feet. It was this sudden movement that brought the entangled spirit creature about, its hate-filled eyes coming to rest directly on the partially hidden Veilmen. Grasping at any opportunity to divert the clinging druid for the instant that would permit it a chance to break free of those crushing arms, the skull-bearer struck at the unprepared Flick. Twin bolts of flame shot out of the burning eyes, shattering the stone blocks of the staircase into deadly fragments which flew in all directions like little knives. Flick acted instinctively, diving out of the staircase onto the walkway, his hands and face cut by the stone, but his life saved by his quickness. As he leaped clear, the entire entryway shuddered abruptly and collapsed in a cascade of broken stone blocks that completely shut off the passage upward, the dust billowing out of the rubble in heavy clouds. In that same instant,
As Flick lay frightened and shaken, but still conscious on the stone floor of the furnace chamber, with the flames from the roaring pit rising higher to meet the clouds of dust from the blocked passage, Al-Anon's grip relaxed just enough to permit the crafty spirit creature to break loose. Whirling about with a cry of hatred, it struck the distracted druid a crushing blow on the head, knocking the tall wanderer to his knees. The Northlander moved in for the kill, but somehow the dazed mystic was on his feet again, the blue bolts from the lean hands flashing fiercely as they struck the unprotected head of the attacker. Powerful fists rained resounding blows on both sides of the creature's black head, turning the battered figure about once again as the great arms wound with crushing force about its chest, pinning the wings and claw-tipped hands back against the writhing body. Holding the creature thus, the steel-eyed druid gritted his gleaming teeth in fury and squeezed. Flick, still lying on the floor as the two combatants loomed above him several yards away, heard a horrible crunching sound as something snapped inside the skull-bearer. Then with a lurch, the two figures were again next to the low iron railing, every straining feature clearly revealed in the flames, the thunder of the burning pit matched in its power and its fury by the wail of agony from the shattered victim, as the black, hooked body shuddered once. From some deep well of strength and hatred buried within, the skull-bearer summoned one last desperate surge of power, throwing itself over the iron railing, its clutching fingers embedded in the black-cloaked attacker as it fell, dragging its hated enemy with it, and both figures were lost in the glow of the hungry flames. The fallen Flick climbed dazedly to his feet, shock slowly spreading over his battered face. He tottered unsteadily toward the edge of the furnace pit, but the heat was so intense that he was forced back. He tried once more without success, the sweat pouring down from his forehead into his eyes and mouth, mingling slowly with tears of helpless anger. The flames from the pit soared above the low iron railing, licking hungrily at the stone and crackling with new life as if to acknowledge the addition of the two black-garbed creatures to the fuel it greedily consumed. Through the mist that coated his burning eyes, the veilman gazed fixedly toward the bottomless pit. There was nothing beyond the red glow of the flames and the unbearable heat. Hopelessly, he called out the druid's name over and over in futile desperation, each call sending the echoes bouncing off the stone walls and dying in the heat of the fire. But the veilman found himself alone with the roar of the flames, and he knew at last that the druid was gone. He panicked then. In a mad dash, he scrambled back from the fiery pit. He reached the rubble of the stairway before he remembered that it had been blocked, and he collapsed for a moment amid the broken rock. Shaking his head to clear his muddled brain, he felt the full intensity of the fire. He knew instinctively that if he did not escape the chamber in a matter of minutes, the heat would bake him alive. He bounded up and ran to the closest stone door, pushing and pulling on it in desperation. But the door did not move. And at last he stopped, his hands bloody from the effort. He looked down the wall, his eyes finding a second door. He stumbled on to this one, but it too was secured from the other side. He felt his hopes dim into nothingness, certain now that he was trapped. Woodenly he forced himself to move on to the third. It was with the last of his fading strength, as he pushed and pulled frantically on the stubborn barricade, that he touched something hidden in the rock and triggered the mechanism that permitted it to open. With a cry of relief, the battered veilman fell through the opening into the passageway beyond, kicking the stone door shut as he lay in the semi-darkness, locking himself away from the heat and the death that remained behind. For many long minutes he lay exhausted in the darkness of the corridor, his burning body soaking up the cool of the stone floor and the soothing air. He didn't try to think,
didn't care to remember, but wished only to lose himself in the peace and quiet of the Tunnel Rock. At last he forced himself wearily to his knees, then to his feet in a final effort, leaning dazedly against the cold stone of the passage wall as he waited for his strength to return. He realized for the first time that his clothing was torn and burned almost beyond recognition, his hands and face singed and blackened from the heat. He looked around slowly, his stocky frame straightening itself as he pushed away from the wall. The dim light of the torch on the wall ahead indicated the direction in which the winding corridor ran, and he stumbled forward until he was able to grasp the burning piece of wood from its rack. He shuffled along slowly, the torch extended to light his way. Somewhere ahead he heard shouting, and instinctively his free hand went to the handle of his short hunting knife, drawing the weapon from its sheath. After several minutes the noise seemed to move farther away, and at last die out altogether, and still the Veilman had seen nothing. The corridor wound through the rock in curious fashion, taking Flick past several doors, all of which were closed and barred, but never leading upward and never branching off into other passageways. Ever so often, the darkness ahead was broken by the dim light of a burning torch securely fastened to the stone, its yellow light casting his shadow against the far wall like a misshapen wraith fleeing into the darkness. Then abruptly, the passage widened and the light ahead grew stronger. Flick hesitated a moment, grasping his weapon tightly, his face streaked with lines of smoke and sweat, but grimly determined in the flickering glow. There was no sound as he inched his way forward. He knew that somewhere there had to be a stairway leading to the main hall of the Druid's Keep. So far, it had been a long and futile search, and he was becoming exhausted. He wished belatedly that he hadn't been so eager to remain behind, allowing himself to be cut off from the main party. Now he was trapped in these unfathomable corridors at the center of Paranor. Anything could have happened to the others by this time, he thought dismally, and he might never find them wandering through this maze. He edged his way a little farther around a bend in the rock, his muscles tensed, peering carefully into the light. To his surprise, he found himself at the entrance to a round chamber with numerous other passages leading into it. A dozen or so torches burned cheerfully from the circular wall. He breathed a sigh of relief when he saw that the rotunda was deserted. Then he realized that he was no better off than he had been before. The other passages looked exactly like the one he had come through. There were no doors leading to other rooms, no stairways leading to the upper level, and no indication as to which way he should go. He looked around in bewilderment, desperately trying to identify one passage from another, his hope fading with each passing second and each repeated survey. At last he shook his head in confusion. Moving to one of the walls, he sat down wearily, closing his eyes as he forced himself to accept the bitter fact that he was hopelessly lost. On Al-Anon's command, the remainder of the company had broken for the stairway. Durin and Dale were closest to the stone passage and, being the fastest in the group, found themselves halfway up the steps before the others had even begun the short climb. Their lithe, elven limbs carried them up the flight of stairs in gliding, bounding leaps, barely touching the stone as they ran. Hendel, Menyon, and Balinor came in a rush behind, their progress partially impeded by their heavy weapons.